Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:54 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is August 19th. I thought we'd kick off today in Asia and look at Japan. The market was down about 300 points, but the Nikkei is trading back below the trend mean. And there's certainly been a pattern of outperformance by the topics over the course of the last few months. But the wider implication here is when we look at the movers intraday, then there's definitely a defensive tilt to the better performers. So certainly we're seeing Chugai Pharmaceutical and Shionogi. It's another pharmaceutical company. Astellas is another one. Daiichi is another one. So certainly we're seeing demand coming through for the pharmaceutical sector, and then household goods as well. So these are basically consumer staple type of operations. So, and then we look at the negative side of the column. It's the industrials, and most particularly then you've got Toyota in there, and Mitsubishi as well. So one thing has been quite clear is that there are difficulties within the automotive sector. The first is simple enough, that they're having difficulty manufacturing enough, and that led to price increases. And price increases, well, then they can only go up so far before they inhibit people's ability to pay for new vehicles. And we may be at that point right now, because palladium prices are pulling back. And palladium has been the supply and elasticity market of choice for traders over the course of the last 5 years. It was down another $115 in here today. So that is potentially reflective of not only that supply may be increasing as a result of somewhat firmer nickel prices, and but nickel is also in weaker territory in here today. But I think and of course, palladium is a byproduct of nickel mining. But I think it's perhaps more relevant to think about demand. And the automotive sector has been pulling back in a pretty sharp manner for most of the last couple of months. And it is not simply about Ford, but when we just look around the world at the automotive sector, we've had big moves on the upside, and now BMW, for example, is breaking its sequence of higher reaction lows. So there is obviously the high price of vehicles, the backlog of orders that they have, but then the question is, will people be able to pay for them when they do come to market? So there are a number of big questions about the automotive sector, and that's before one even begins to think about the implied costs of building out renewable energy and battery technology over the course of the next few years. So that is weighing on Japan, but we certainly saw that the second section index had been underperforming from the last couple of weeks. Now, it has not broken down, but it is in a process of consolidation in the region of the peak from back in 2018. So certainly there is scope here for a bit of additional volatility in Japan. And of course, that also was accompanied by news today that demand for exports has started to come back down. So there are certainly some important questions that need to be addressed with regard to global demand for products and services. The Australian index, the ASX 200, was also in negative territory today. Now, it's still trending in a consistent manner, provided the low from today holds. So we can clearly see that there is a succession of ranges, one above another, since March of 2000, and that remains in place. And the last two ranges were virtually equally sized in terms of their amplitude and duration. So far, this is an equal-sized reaction, and provided that's all it is, well, then this will still remain a consistent trend overall. But we've also started to see some rotation coming through in Australia. So When we look at the worst performers, well, then a large number of those are in the resources sector. BHP, Fortescue, Rio Tinto, they were all down in excess of 5% in here today. Woodside Petroleum continues to trend downwards. Whitehaven Coal was down 3%. Oil Search down heavily in here today as well. So certainly we will need to take a look at some of those industrial resources companies. But then it's worth thinking about the ones that have been resurgent. Redbubble was up nearly 19%. And I think that's what was also particularly interesting about these types of companies is that they've already had big declines. So Redbubble is down from 7 to 3, and this was a whopping upside key day reversal in here today. So that's a very large dynamic move. It suggests that the lows are in and that potentially there is additional upside here. Redbubble produces custom t-shirts and various different retail items. The other interesting one I thought in terms of its chart pattern is Kogan, and that again is another example of Australian companies that are well outside the resources sector, and it looks like it's put in a higher reaction low. It's an online marketplace. So obviously Amazon is now active in Australia, but it's been a long time coming there, and there are established products and services for the online community in Australia. So it looks potentially like Kogan is starting to bottom. So then the question is, what's happened to the resources sector? And I think we can just sum it up in one word: it's China. So it's not simply that we have slowing economic activity globally, but China is in the throes of a deleveraging process. So iron ore prices are down heavily in here over the course of the last week. Now, they were a little bit in firmer territory in here today, and there is a short-term oversold condition, but any semblance of a consistent trend is gone. And it has clearly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it has pulled back into the underlying range, failed to find support in the region of the trend mean. So this remains a downtrend overall, and of course it's weighing on the iron ore miners. China is attempting to rationalize its massive steel production, and they have more spare steel capacity than the entire I think the And I'm not even sure that this is still accurate, but nearly 10 years ago, they had more steel capacity than the entire steel industries of Japan, Korea, and Taiwan together. And it's quite possible that their steel sector expanded even further in the intervening years. So they are attempting to weigh in on trying to, I think, unbundle all of the oversupply that they have in the market. So that's also relevant in terms of how they're dealing with China Evergrande. And of course, the important point about China Evergrande is it is the largest issuer of debt in the emerging markets universe. So what happens in terms of its ability to sell off its positions in other assets? And there's likely to be a fire sale, so the buyers of those assets are probably going to come away in a rather rosy position. But the big question is then, will China Evergrande be able to survive? Because it's not simply about its leverage, but rather it's about a concerted effort to squeeze leverage out of the property market. So this is also a very significant change. So China is on the one hand attempting to rationalize the steel sector, then the other they're rationalizing the property sector, and then when we think about the banking sector, well, these both of those industries are heavily reliant on access to credit. So the A600 Banks Index has pulled back sharply over the balance of this year, we had a rebound for the last 2 weeks, but it was in negative territory again in here today. And it really does need to hold that low around 14,000 if top formation completion is to be avoided. So there's, and if we just simply look at what's happening, China is on the one hand attempting to exert control, but it's never that simple. There's the real possibility that what the Chinese are fearful of is a hard landing. And if you were really fearful about a hard landing, what would you do? Well, the first thing you'd do is you would clamp down on any kind of protest movement or potential for an opposition party to evolve in advance of a hard landing, if you were worried about one arriving. So they've done that. Then what you would do is you'd try to unwind some of the most leveraged portions of the economy early so that you can do it in a succession manner rather than everything failing at once. So you can moderate the way that it might, you can attempt to blunt the threat from a hard landing by trying to do it in a sequential manner. Well, potentially that is what they are doing. And of course, if that is the case, then the one of the big questions will be how on earth can they sustain a strong currency in that environment? Well, the renminbi is now right in the region of the trend mean, and it certainly had a loss of momentum over the course of the last 4 or 5 months. So I don't think it's beyond the bounds of possibility here that we see some additional weakness for the renminbi and that it break back above the dollar, at least break back above the trend mean, and start to trend back above or back up towards the seven area. And I guess this is really a hypothesis, and I find myself testing hypotheses just to try and figure out exactly what's going on in here. And I think this is important because at the and it's well documented that the economic growth that China's achieved over the course of the last decade has been predicated on leverage and debt. And that can go on for as long as the quantities continue to rise. And we know exactly what that feels like because the size of central bank balance sheets have continued to rise in the West. The amount of fiscal and monetary stimulus, as long as it's trending higher, it supports asset prices. But when it starts to get taken away, much less when quantitative tightening begins, well, then it does start to weigh on asset prices and it begins to act as a contractionary force on the economy. So perhaps China is using the opportunity of abundant global liquidity to make its move to try and deleverage the domestic economy in the hope that global liquidity will blunt the effect of the deleveraging process that they've been trying to achieve. So it's certainly an interesting way of thinking about the market. And if the renminbi starts to break down, well, then I think we might have some evidence of it. But then, of course, the big question is going to be about the integrity of the bull markets that we have in industrial resources, because copper is now right in the region of the $4 area and the 200-day moving average, and it's been down in a dynamic manner this week. So this is it. If it's going to find support in the near term, it should hold that $4 area. If it fails here, well, it's unlikely to do so on its own, and it could be a deleterious effect or have a deleterious effect on the wider industrial resources sector. So the LME Metals Index, which has been particularly strong and has had this really impressive advance up from the lows in 2020, now has a lower rally high. There's a loss of momentum evident, so there's clearly scope here for additional weakness. And if copper breaks down, it's likely to take the entire industrial resources sector with it. Then oil prices remain weak. So oil is now back in the region of the trend mean as well. Not quite there yet, but not far off it either. So this is also a potential area of support. If support is going to come back in, well, then this is about where we might anticipate that happening. So it was off the lows in here today, and obviously there has been some contraction in supply over the course of the last few months, and the oversupply situation is beginning to balance out because we've had some economic recovery. You'll notice that a lot of what's going on is not particularly to do with the Delta variant, and yet that is something that everyone is still talking about, and it still has the potential to affect markets. But the much more important factor is that something we've seen over the last 6 months has been that the ability of the virus to impact markets decreased steadily, and it only increased again when there was any question about tapering the quantity of assistance that's being provided. So we've definitely seen that the resources sector is beginning to express some anxiety about the fountain of liquidity being turned off. 10-year treasuries are still holding this 1.2% level, so it's still a higher reaction low overall. There is still potential here that we're going to see additional upside, and it's a bullish chart overall as long as that 1.2% level continues to hold. And of course, there is still the prospect that liquidity will continue to flow, and not least because of the substantial quantity of additional money that the USA is willing to print. But nonetheless, the dollar remains quite steady. So this pressure that's coming to bear on emerging markets and this risk of an unruly outcome in China is helping to support the dollar index, and it was up in a dynamic manner in here today and closing at a new recovery high. So this does look like a bullish chart overall, and as long as it is holding that succession of higher reaction lows, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It would also indicate that I've been incorrect, that I was really quite bearish of the dollar, and well, this is a confirming action that we're in a more bullish environment overall. But it may also be confirmation that we are entering more of a risk-off environment overall. Gold prices remain really quite firm, and that's in US dollar terms. So when we look at gold in other currencies, then we see a much stronger rebound. So then when, for example, we look at it in euro, it's coming back up into the region of the highs over the course of the last 3 months. And when we think about it then in terms of the renminbi, we're coming back into the area of the trend mean. But then the big question is, if the renminbi breaks down, then gold should start to attract interest. Then the Bitcoin price remains quite steady, and that is, I think, likely to continue to attract interest as people start to worry about what's going on in the wider market. And it's the easy answer right now because it's still a consistent trend overall and up from that low in July. This is an equal-sized reaction compared to the one at the end of July and early August. And as long as it's holding the lower side of that range, well, then this is likely to continue to be a bullish environment. So it's looking like the cryptocurrency markets are attracting interest as people start to express angst at what could potentially be an unruly situation in China. And of course, also the potential that we're entering a period of competitive currency devaluation, because it's not like the USA is going to stop printing or that they're suddenly going to adopt balanced budgets, but rather that we're entering a point where there is the potential that we might have tapering this year. I'm still doubtful that they'll be able to go ahead with that, but you never know. And certainly the dollar remains quite steady, gold remains quite steady, and Bitcoin remain quite steady. Then we can think about what's going on in terms of the very large companies, because Amazon has got a failed upside break. And it's coming back down towards the psychological 3,000 level. There's a loss of momentum evident over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. So this is not the first time the price has ranged. It's not even the first failed upside break. And the challenge, of course, right now is that Amazon's next big idea is a blast from the past. And it's not really evident that they've come up with something that is truly revolutionary. They're opening physical stores. That's been done before, and it's an inefficient use of capital. Of course, Amazon has plenty of capital, but it's also indicative of the low interest rate environment and the dearth of opportunities. And it's not why people have been investing in Amazon. They invest in Amazon because they think that they're buying innovation and they're buying solutions to problems they didn't even know they had. And brick and mortar stores just don't fill that gap. At the other extreme, Nvidia was up in a reasonably firm manner today, although it did not hold its highs. But it was certainly a positive second quarter, and they are expressing some enthusiasm about the third quarter, but it wasn't up in a very dynamic manner. And certainly, again, when we look at the semiconductor sector, well, semiconductors overall have lost momentum as well. So I think this is relevant, that we know that the semiconductor sector in particular is highly cyclical. And as supply of semiconductors increases, well, then it has the real potential to overwhelm demand. Then Netflix also reported in here today, and it was strong. So this did fall close at the upper side of the intraday range, and it's at least confirming support around the $500 area. But again, this is another exceptionally volatile range and a clear loss of momentum following the big move up from early 2000. So perhaps it's ready for another pop on the upside. But in order to do that, it will have to break back above the $600 area. And I've just remained doubtful that it's capable of doing that. Then we can think about the broader index of extremely large companies. So the Fangman index of and their market caps is still hovering around the 10 trillion level, and a lot of that has been predicated on liquidity. So certainly there's been a loss of momentum among the wider mega cap sector, and that would suggest that we're still in a rotationary period for the market. This is quite similar to what happened after the credit crisis in 2008. We had the massive decline, and then we had an equally impressive rebound for just about everything. And subsequently, we had some reordering in the market. So we had the number of shares that were trading above the trend mean go to almost zero, then go to almost all of them, and then it pulled back in a violent manner in 2010 before rebounding. And then we had just a normal ebb and flow of the market afterwards. And I suspect that that is what's going on right now. So the number of companies that are trading above their respective trend means is declining. and the leadership within the market is narrowing. So we've certainly got still outperformance by the Nasdaq because of the outlook for the very large companies, but then the Russell 2000 is rolling over. I think here we're at an important juncture for markets, and I think a lot of it is going to be about the outlook for liquidity and also the outlook for China, and I think those are by far the most important things we need to monitor. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.